And basically, the work here is we're looking at whether the electromagnetic cell force plays a role in cosmic censorship, in particular, whether it plays a role in overcharging a black hole. And so just some background, the cosmic censorship conjecture states that a given space-time, all given space-time singularities are hidden behind event horizons. Therefore, they're invisible to all external observers. And so they're causally disconnected from everything in the outside world. However, if a black hole were destroyed, then the singularity would no longer be hidden. And there's been some scenarios which have looked at, you know, constructing counterexamples to this, but they've been non-generic. Until recently, Huberny in 1999 proposed the black hole destruction mechanism in which a test charge is dropped onto like a nearly extremal black hole in which, you know, you could create a condition in which the mass is less than the charge, which destroys the black hole and exposes the singularity. However, Huberny neglected the radiation reaction, and therefore her results were inconclusive. So she treated the charge as a test charge. And although she found a region of parameter space where overcharging was possible, there was some inconsistencies in her analysis. And so our aim is to look at whether her conclusions or whether we can fill in some of the blanks in her conclusions by including the full electromagnetic cell force. And so is neglecting the cell force justified? And here we can just look at the scalings. So if small q and small m are the mass of the particle, the charge of the particle and the mass of the particle, and big M and big Q are the mass of the black hole and the charge of the black hole, respectively, then the cell force on the particle, F sub self, scales as Q squared over M squared. And the cell, or the force of the charge on the black hole scales as roughly Q over M. And so if you take the ratio of these two, and you find that if Q is small over epsilon and M is about 1, then this scales as epsilon. And therefore, one might be led to conclude that the self-force effects are irrelevant. However, if you look at the second-order form of the equations of motion that Huberny used, it reveals that in the test particle case, the acceleration is order of epsilon squared, which is also the order of the electromagnetic self-force. So it plays a role, and therefore can not be neglected in a self-consistent analysis. So before we discuss the self-force, let's just look at some, perhaps, test charges in Reisner-Nordström. So if we have a particle of mass m and charge of q, which is much larger than the mass, and we just send it in on a radial path towards a black hole of mass big M and charge of q minus 2 epsilon squared, you know, where epsilon is a small positive parameter, and we drop charge of order epsilon on it, and it's easy to see that it's going to bump it over because it's m minus epsilon squared, and if you add epsilon charge, you would be led to think that it's going to bump it over. So that's the reasoning behind that parameterization. Okay, so if you look at the Reisner-Nordström space-time, you have a time-like killing vector t, and this gives rise to a conserved quantity e naught, which is just the inner product between t and this generalized momentum, mu plus qa. And we can use this quantity and look at in using the normalization of the four velocity, write down equations of motion in forced order form, which are just mt dot equals this and mr dot equals that. So these just describe radial infall of the test charge in Reisner-Nordström, where f is the usual f for Reisner-Nordström, 1 minus 2 mrr plus the charge of the black hole squared over r squared. So what are the conditions we need to overcharge a black hole? So one, we want the black hole to fall in. In other words, r dot squared is greater than 0 for all r greater than or equal to the horizon. So there's no turning points. It's on a one-way trip past the horizon. And two, that the final charge of the space-time, or that q of the black hole plus the little charge, is greater than the mass of the black hole plus the energy that falls in, that goes into it. And you can look for solutions of these conditions. and choose a parameterization, which is this three-parameter family that Huberny chose, and she was able to come up with a region of the phase space that looks like this sort of wedge shape here, which allows for the overcharging, which is that Q is A at times epsilon for A greater than 1, E naught, the energy, it takes the form A epsilon minus 2B epsilon squared, and M is C epsilon, where A, B, and C obey these conditions. So next, looking at the field equations, we take the electromagnetic field tensor and decompose it in terms of multifolds. So FTR takes the form sum over all L and M of this phi 1 coefficient times the spherical harmonic YLM. And FTA, where big A is denotes the angular coordinates, takes the form of the spherical harmonic, or the tensor spherical, or vector spherical harmonic times the phi 2. And if you plug these in to the Maxwell field equations, you find that these scalar fields obey these two PDEs. So phi 2 obeys what looks like what it is, a wave equation with a potential term L plus 1 over R squared times F, and then the source J of R. So this is the usual wave equation where the source is given by this. I should say R, big R here is the location of the particle. I ran out of R's. And phi 1 obeys this auxiliary equation, and it's really phi 1 that we're concerned with here, because that's the piece of the self field, or that is the self field. So the goal is to solve the wave equation for phi 2, and we do this using Roland Haas's fourth order numerical scheme, and then use that to compute the self field, or the retarded field, phi 1, by integrating the auxiliary equation. And so given phi 2 is known, given J is known, we can compute just the phi 1 field essentially by the method of lines. So going up individual lines of R star, we can get close to the point of the particle and then just move along on lines of R star and go up time. So that's what's indicated here. And this schematic shows that. So you just go across lines of R star and then get close to the particle, and we can interpolate to the point of the particle. So I haven't included the source term there because we never actually go over the particle. So I think that's taken care of by the regularization parameters. So having done this, you obtain the retarded field, but we really want the regular field. So we perform this mode sum regularization, which has been talked about. And so that gives the self field. And then we can look at the total FTR, which is the piece from the black hole, which is just the electrostatic field, plus the the regular field, which we write in this way, Q over R squared, which is the electrostatic field, plus the retarded field, which is now parameterized by this scale factor K, where K is a world line dependent dimensionless quantity, which is computed from the retarded field. So we solve for this K. And then by doing that, we can compute the generalized energy, which is just E naught minus this integral from R to infinity of K over R cubed. So that allows us to compute a generalized energy. And we can plug that in to our equation of motion for R, and we get a generalized radial equation, which now includes the dissipation of energy due to the self force. And so diagrammatically here, you have a plot on the left, which shows this difference of E minus QR squared with no energy dissipation. And what you can see is that the two never cross, and therefore the particle, you know, there's no turning point, so R dot squared is always greater than zero, so it falls in. And then what we have here on the right is if energy is lost, and this is just something that may happen, we haven't actually computed this yet, so this is a potential scenario in which there is a turning point, and the dissipation of energy due to the self force has prevented the particle from falling in the black hole, and therefore is acting as sort of a enforcer of cosmic censorship. And so, you know, this is very much a work in progress, and I'll just go through and show you or outline what we've done and what remains to be done. So we've been able to express the perturbed Maxwell equations in a suitable form. The regularization parameters have been computed by both Roland and Eric separately and tested, and they seem to agree and give the proper 1 over L squared when the B term has been removed. We've been able to numerically solve the wave equation for phi 2 for radial infall. And what remains to be done is to implement accurate scheme, a fourth order scheme, to get the retarded field FTR, which is proportional to phi 1, and from that compute K of R, which should be relatively straightforward. And then again, once that's really the hard step, and then getting this is just performing another integration. And then once we have that, we want to analyze the results and look for turning points and et cetera. So that's it.
Okay, let me tell you all in that. So what's going to be the answer? Are you going to violate Cosmic Censorship or not?
You'll have to come back.
I can tell you what the expected answer is. I can tell you what the interesting answer would be.
Okay.
What about the probable answer?
So there was a similar claim for Kerr by Ted Jacobson. So is anybody trying to do the same?
No, they didn't put any radiation reaction. Right? No. That goes one step further.
Yeah.
So
I guess the point is, if it doesn't work here, like it won't work in
But I think it will work in both cases.
Oh, you're for violation?
I'm against that.
Oh, okay.
I'm
concerned. Are you calculating just the electromagnetic self force or also the gravitational and the cross term between the electromagnetic and gravitational self forces?
We just calculate electromagnetic.
Okay, so even if let's say you reduce the parameter space where you can have relations to constant censorship, but there still remains some non-zero set, could be that the other set forces, the gravitational or the cross computational electromagnetic, could have an effect on it too. So the results may not necessarily be conclusive.
True.
But aren't they in Q much larger than M here?
So yeah, we've accounted for the fact that the gravitational self force should be small relative to the electromagnetic by taking the charge to mass ratio to be big.
Mm-hmm. But that's a limitation that we have to impose on ourselves to basically allow ourselves to ignore the gravitational aspects of the self force. Mm-hmm. So in that region of parameter space, we'll be able to reach a conclusion. If we wanted to relax this, we couldn't. And that would require doing a lot more work.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Yeah, Tom.
I mean, this is sort of similar to what was just asked. Because Q is so much larger than L, is the electromagnetic self force, that is, the self force, because this thing is radiating off radio waves as it's a charge moving in on this weird trajectory, is that going to be a significant contributor to the dynamics and to the energy balance?
Right, well, that's what Peter was saying right at the beginning, so that in order to consider those scenarios that Hubini identified, basically the point is that you can barely send a particle across the event horizon, but at the event horizon, the speed has been reduced down to something very small, and the acceleration has been reduced down to something very small of the same order as the EVA.
I see what you're getting at.
So to prove the existence, to prove the non-existence of turning points, you have to know what the self force is doing.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay, let's break for coffee and we'll resume for the second discussion at 4:30. Thank you all.